it's helpful for all marriages. I think Priscilla's image of the getting the car serviced is not the most romantic one, but it's a good one, because if you don't get it serviced, the car goes horribly wrong and the engine explodes and it all gets very expensive. Marriage can be like that too. Last year I came and I talked about the two kind of fundamentals, the foundations of healthy marriage relationships, which were effective communication and healthy conflict management. So I talked a bit about those last year. If you've got a question about those, you could ask it later on. I'm not going to focus on them again this year, because this year I want to focus on something that often creates conflict that ends up being a challenge to resolve because couples don't actually recognise the real problem that's going on. So let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. One, we won't be gender specific, but one spouse goes to the fridge and opens it and finds the milk carton in there with just this much milk left in the bottom of it. You could have just put it in the cup. You could have even just gone like this if nobody was looking. And it all would have been okay. But no, they put it back with just a little tiny bit left in the bottom. And for some reason, I wasn't looking at you, Julie. For some reason, this is a big deal. And they get really grumpy about it, and they end up having a fight about it, and fight ends up escalating into something really big over this little thing left in the bottom of the milk. And it kind of feels really silly, but why do you think it's happening? Why is that such a big deal that there's this little bit of milk left in the bottom and they didn't just get rid of it so there could be space in the fridge? Is that where that comes from? That's exactly where it comes from. It's because every day while they were growing up at home for, you know, however many decades that involved, that's what they did in their family. You wouldn't put the thing back because it was a big family and you needed all the space in the fridge, so you wouldn't waste space in the fridge by putting a whole bottle of milk in there when there was just this little tiny bit at the bottom. You just finish it off. The other person comes from the family where they were an only child and, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of money around. And so every little bit adds up, and so you've got to keep the milk because you could actually, you know, you could have a little cup of tea with that. Wouldn't want to waste it. The expiry date's still well off, stuff like that. And they don't notice what's going on. And it's because they've come from very different families of origin. In marrying another person, you are marrying their family. And people don't often realise this, and often when we're doing marriage prep, this is one of those light bulb moments where people see something they hadn't seen before, and a whole bunch of things that might have been sources of conflict and stress start to make sense for them. Our sense of identity, our sense of who we are, our sense of personal values, our fundamental worldview assumptions, including our assumptions about how families work and how marriage works, those have been ingrained in us, developed over many, many years of experiencing a family. Our fundamental assumptions about marriage have been profoundly shaped at the subconscious level by the marriage of our parents. And that means that when we enter into our own marriage partnership, we bring with us a whole bunch of baggage, all of it subconscious. We've got these assumptions and we've got these sort of ingrained beliefs on how we should be in our marriage and how the other person should be in our marriage. And they're not things we've thought carefully about. We're not conscious of thinking about these things. They're just assumptions that we've taken on, kind of, I don't know anything about science, but kind of by osmosis, I think is a word that might make sense to you. You just absorb them because you've been immersed in a family situation for so many years. And what that also means is that unless we're intentional about our marriages, then everybody tends to default to the approach to marriage that their parents had. So you know those moments where you catch yourself and you're going, oh my goodness, I was just my mother. That's because that's what we default to. I'm thinking of the women here, for me it's normally my dad, but in my case that is what it is. That's what we default to. We don't consciously decide that's what we want to do. I want to be my mum. I want to be my dad. It just happens. The exception is where we were so put off by our parents' approach to marriage, so maybe hurt by our parents' approach to marriage, that we are actually utterly committed to doing the opposite to it. which will almost invariably involve overcompensating in the opposite direction, which brings its own challenges and issues. A lot of people have never thought about this stuff in the lead up to marriage, and a lot of people still haven't ever thought about it years down the track. But it is really, really important because it affects our marriages in two key ways. Firstly, the fact that we both come from different families of origin, that is responsible for some of the conflict that we experience in our marriages. Because of different family of origins, we come to marriage with different expectations about what is the right way to do something, what is normal. And so when they're different, then that conflict is what happens. And so as an example, I've asked, Julie's given me permission to use to use some examples from our own experience. So Julie and I come from quite different families of origin, and you see this manifested in whenever one of the girls is sick or injured. So in my family of origin, unless the bone was protruding from skin, then you're okay and just get on with it. Stick yourself up. Is there blood? No. Well, then you're fine. Off you go. In Julie's family of origin, if somebody sort of sneezes, then you go to ICU and the whole family gathers to provide chicken soup and things like that. And so this manifests itself when, you know, one of the girls has fallen down the stairs or has got a fever, and should they go to school or should they not go to school? Is there bone protruding from skin? Is there blood? No, well, she should go to school. The temperature is a microfraction above what the thing. She must go to hospital, kind of. Because the reason this happens is we come from quite different families of origin, and so we have to recognise that, and sort of that shades what is going on and how we deal with those things. So that's the first way that this matters, because it does result in conflict. Second, sadly, some people have been subject to extremely negative models and patterns in their family of origin and the marriage of their parents. And they then reflect those models or patterns in their own marriage with the consequences that you would expect to flow from that. And so in the most extreme example, you see people who've grown up in abusive family relationships then echoing that as they form a new family and abuse in spousal abuse or kids. Or families that have been rent by divorce and then an impact on children struggling to hold their own marriages together. And so there's that extreme level of impact as well. So it is important to think about these things. And as we do, we could talk all day about it, but I'm trying to work out what should we focus on. Family of origin issues often manifest across two key dimensions of marriage, and so that's what we're going to focus on. They manifest across couple closeness and couple flexibility. Couple closeness and couple flexibility, and I'll talk about those things in a second. But I thought, rather than me just talking, an exercise I always get couples to do in our marriage preparation stuff is to map their family of origin across those two dimensions, and then to map their spouse's family of origin across those two dimensions and to see how those things line up, and then to map their own new family couple relationship against those two dimensions. And that often helps them to think about why they and their partner do some of the things they do or think some of the things they think, and it can often help help them approach areas of conflict in new ways. It also gets them thinking about what they want to replicate and what they want to leave behind from their family of origin. And in extreme cases, it can help them to see, actually, there's a thing here we're going to need some help with. Because sometimes you do need the help. So I thought we might do that exercise. Each of us might do it. And so I put these extra pencils on the table, so don't pinch them, but there should be one for you. And just sort of use everybody ends up with one of those. So I'll just wait till everybody's got one, and then I'll talk a bit about it. I'm not going to ask you to share your things, so don't worry about that. It's not, I can collect these and mark them or anything afterwards.
keep charged.
Okay, so there should be a pencil on the table in front of you. So, really, the only thing you need to see at this point is it says closeness across the top and flexibility down the side. Those are those two dimensions. So, across the top, we've got closeness. Closeness refers to how emotionally connected you and your partner, or you and your family, you and your partner, you and your spouse are, you and your family were. So how do we balance separateness and togetherness in our family? How did we do that when I was growing up? How do we do that now? And sort of, it's, you know, the language that goes with this is I versus we. Are we more I or are we more we? Loyalty, where does that fit into our family, into our new family? Independence versus dependence. And so in thinking about closeness, the two extremes are disconnected and overly connected. Those are kind of the two extremes. And so disconnected families, disconnected couples, most interactions seem to end up involving conflict or criticism. The sort of families that rarely have dinner together and don't really miss it. Where a couple don't know what's going on in each other's lives, or a family don't know what's going on in each other's lives. Where people have completely separate interests that the other people never share in. That's kind of a picture of disconnected at that extreme. And then at the other end, overly connected couples and families. So the couple that kind of disappears into the relationship and can't seem to do anything unless they're doing it together. Well, the family that has to prioritise the family thing above everything else, no matter what else is going on in life, and even as kids grow up and start to take on independence. Those things have got to come first. Where relationships where there can be jealousy when time is spent apart with other people who aren't the spouse or aren't family. If one of the partners or family members can't make a decision, even on a little thing, without consulting the others, that's a sign of over-connectedness. You've got to know where each other are, sort of every hour of the day. Again, another sign of over-connectedness. So in thinking about the level of connection in your family of origin, it's often instructive to think about how did family holidays work? How did special family celebrations, how were those handled? How was conflict handled in my family? How did the family care for somebody when they were sick? So just where would you put your family on that scale across the top there? Just don't mark it down yet, but just have a think. And then down the other side, we have flexibility, family flexibility, couple flexibility. So flexibility refers to how couples and families, how open they are to change. How do they balance stability and change? And so indicators of flexibility are your ability to adjust leadership and relationship roles when circumstances require that. Or the consistency of discipline, the consistency of family rules, the freedom that's enjoyed by different members of the family. And so here the two extremes are inflexible and overly flexible. So inflexible families, there's one right way of doing everything, and that's the way you've got to do it. They've got very, very clear and very, very strict and rigid boundaries over who's allowed to make what sort of decisions, and often that might be concentrated. People in an inflexible family often have trouble stepping into somebody else's role when circumstances kind of demand it, because maybe somebody's sick or something. Very, very clear, very, very strict rules and discipline. So that's inflexible families. And then overly flexible families often have very inconsistent discipline, or maybe very little discipline. They might lack clear boundaries. Family never seems to have stable plans or patterns. Everything's always different. Everybody has freedom to do whatever they want without necessarily considering the consequences on other members of the family. Often, overly flexible families seem to lack any leadership. So in thinking about the level of flexibility in your family of origin, it's often instructive to think about how was discipline handled in our family? How did our family cope and respond when crises came along? How were holidays planned? How were weekly meals and schedules planned? How regularly did life change dramatically for us as a family? How often did parents change jobs or move house or whatever. So any questions about those two dimensions? Because now your job is to map where you think your family of origin would sit in those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, what are they? 25 squares. So you're thinking about where along each of those axes would I put my family of origin and where would I put my spouse's family of origin? Do that first. But any questions just to clarify any of that? No? All right, we'll just take a minute to do it. If you've got a question, shout it out. So my family of origin, the family I grew up in, and then my spouse's. Obviously the corners are the most extreme. It's supposed to be copying answers there, is it that? Okay, so your family, your spouse's family, and then the third is your couple relationship or your family. Where would you put your family, the one you've just created, well, you now have with your spouse 14 years ago, in my particular case, 17 years now. Where would you put it on that grid? Give you one more minute to do that. Okay. So there's a few things that we can learn from thinking about this. One is if you put, if you picked a box for either of, for any of those really, that was in the shaded area around the outside, this is a thing you're going to need to think about a bit because that's pointing in a kind of a extreme direction on one scale or another. So we, the goal in these things is families, experience suggests that families do best when they're in one of those white boxes in the middle. The further you are towards the outside, the more challenges can be involved. And so there's a sense of balance that's important in these things. So if you're on one of the edges, well, you need to think about, well, what is that about? What's got us there? Do we see that manifesting in particular conflict in our relationship? And if you're on the edges, it might be you might need some help with some of that. We're certainly not going to sort it out this morning. But the other thing that's instructive is if you and your spouse's family of origin are in quite different places, then that's a thing worth thinking about. And going, do we see actually this reflected in conflict sometimes? It's not always, because sometimes the thing that attracted your spouse to you was the fact that you were quite different in this area and they think that's fantastic. But it's one of those things worth noticing. Now, Julie, in my case, I think it would be fair to say, Petal, that our families would be not that dissimilar when it comes to the flexibility thing, but we would be on different sides of the thing when it comes to closeness. And so I gave you one example of that. Another example would be if we go away anywhere, then we have to call Julie's mum, or, you know, I mean, it doesn't help that we travel to places where people blow things up, but you know, she gets quite anxious. Whereas in my family, I travelled for 2 months in Asia and didn't call my parents once when I was about 20, or something like that. And that was, nobody thought that was odd. And so there's an example of two people who are on different sides of the closeness spectrum, although I think in terms of the flexibility thing, we're probably not that dissimilar. And so that does manifest itself in different points of conflict in our relationship, but it's helpful, kind of helps us to avoid escalating those things often when we understand that it's coming from different... It's not that one of us is right and one of us is wrong, it's that we come from different... It's not the way Julie tells it, but it's that we come from different families of origin and our families have done things differently. And it's not that one's right and one's wrong, but we just need to negotiate how we're going to deal with that. So just have a look at your thing. Were you and your spouse in a very different family of origins? Come from very different family of origins? Come from very similar family of origins? If they're very different, it's worth thinking about. Well, does that manifest itself in conflict in different ways? Is it possible that sometimes we might get a bit escalated in our conflict about things that really are just about differences of family of origin? So I think there's some value in just taking that and reflecting on it. The other is thinking about where you are as a couple in relationship to your family of origin and where you want it to be. Because if you marked yourself in one of those coloured boxes, I'd suggest to you that's probably not where you want to be going forward. You want to be in the white zone, and you want to think about, well, where do we want to be? And so one of the things I encourage couples to do is to think about, what did I really value about my family of origin, and have we brought those things with us into our marriage? If we haven't, well, why haven't we and how could we? What do I really, really value about my spouse's family of origin? What do I really love about that, the way he grew up and what I know of his family? And are we reflecting that in our family, new family that we've built? And if we're not, then, well, how can we? So it's about thinking about where you want to be in that white space, what's going to work best for you guys, and then thinking about, well, are there steps we have to take to get there? So in terms of the closeness thing, it might be your family isn't quite at that closeness thing that you would like, and it might be you've actually got to structure some time into life to kind of foster and develop that. If it feels a bit overly close, then there's a conversation, or probably a number of conversations, that need to happen there to sort of unveil that as a family of origin kind of thing. It's worth saying that you never end up in one box and stay there, because life is a bit chaotic sometimes. And so when you first get married, the closeness thing can be sort of way off the scale, because, you know, we're married now and we're the most important people in this fantastic life is transformed. And then kids come along, and there's craziness of running around with nappies, and it always happens to be at the same time as work is really ramping up and all the rest of it. And so you might discover that you move around in the boxes, but the goal is to stay in the centre. And you've got to be a bit intentional about it if you want to aim at a particular place, because as I say, your default is to do what your parents did. And so if you never think about this stuff, you will turn into your parents, generally speaking. Or the extreme opposite caricature of them, because you're rejecting something. So thinking about where do we want to be in that white space, what's going to work best for us, and then talking about it if you're not there at the moment. And so that's the other thing that I encourage couples to do. You could go home and say, we did this really interesting exercise at this thing this morning after eating some nice cake. Can we chat about that for a little bit? When a spouse comes and wants to have that conversation, then the correct answer is yes, even though you may not feel like it, the correct answer is yes. So I think the value of this is seeing, okay, it helps us to unveil, maybe some of our things are about differences in family of origin. Is that what the thing is showing me? I need to think about that a bit more, and just having that in your head as conflict comes up. But then also being intentional about where we want to be in that white space as a family, what we think is going to work best for us. And if it is quite different to your families of origin, then that is going to take, you know, you're going to have to be a bit deliberate and thoughtful about that. Because our default is we just end up back where we came from. But I want to finish, and then if you've got a question, you can ask a question or you can just eat more cake. But I want to finish by making clear that history isn't destiny. So you don't have to turn into your parents, and particularly if your parents had a very bad marriage, you don't have to turn into that. That is not inevitable. It's not like there are train tracks of destiny that are going to take you there and there's nothing that you can do about it. So sometimes couples come and one of them is quite worried because they love this other person, but they come from a very dysfunctional family and they don't want to be there in 15 years' time inflicting that on this other person. And they don't have to be. You will be. You know, your chances of doing it are quite high if you just go into marriage without ever thinking about it. But if you're deliberate and working on your marriage, then history isn't destiny. So we are very heavily influenced by our family of origin. We will tend to replicate it if we just drift through marriage and family life without that intentionality, but we can change. And I want to finish by saying, not everybody here is a Christian, but I want to finish by saying, as a Christian, I know in my head that the God who could raise Jesus from the dead has power to transform any situation at all. And as a pastor, I have seen him demonstrate that again and again and again in all sorts of relationship mess and all sorts of personal brokenness. So certainly if you know that God is part of the equation, then there is always hope of healing and restoration and a new day, because the guy who rose the guy from the dead, he can do anything. And I understand that some of you don't know what I'm talking about when I say that, but if you do, if you're somebody who trusts Jesus, I want to say, if you're going through difficult marriage stuff, the God who raised Jesus from the dead can transform your situation. And so we never, ever, ever give up hope. We keep working on it, we keep going, and we keep hoping. So I wanted to finish on that note for those who are Christians. But that's kind of what I wanted to talk about. But I've got time to answer any questions, don't I? I've got to go and do my public thing, do I?
Thank you, Craig. Thank you, everyone.